tasty treat will double your enjoyment of the show.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, everyone. This is Future Past Ryan coming at you with a massive apology before the episode starts. So the microphone quality on my end is going to be a little bit lower than usual. Again, I do apologize for this. There was a little combination of human error and technical difficulties with my computer. It has since been fixed, thankfully. But anyways, for your listening pleasure, our newest episode of Tea Time, please enjoy.
Welcome to another episode of Tea Time, a series where we discuss topics related to trick takers, shedders, climbers, and other card games, all during your snack break. We're your hosts, Ryan.
I'm Patrick.
And I'm actually going to have Patrick start us off this episode today. It is a brand new year, 2023, and 2022 was filled with lots of games. And Patrick gave himself a challenge towards the end of the year, and I'll let him explain a little bit more about it.
Yeah, it was rather optimistic. I do tend to collect quite a few games, essential research for the podcast, as they say. And essentially, I updated my Board Game Geek profile. I put on there, you know, my 2022 challenge and basically said, I will not be buying any new games unless they're pre-arranged purchases and trades are okay. But I made it very clear to other people who sort of went on my profile that actually, you know, I really, really wasn't in the market for acquiring any more games. And, kind of lied because I set that in October, and I think I might have set it a few months before that, Ryan, and just updated it every month with a new date on it. So I sort of said from September, from October, from November, and so on and so on.
I'm almost certain from the day you told us you were going to start it, which would have maybe been in September, I'm almost certain like 3 days later was the first day you had already bought a game. And you're like, you know what? We'll just wait until October. October will be the new month.
Yeah, I failed with it massively. So, I mean, looking at my stats, I'd acquired 138 games in 2022. It was an epic year of acquisition. And ironically, that was the year that I discovered, sort of fell down the rabbit hole further into the, you know, the world of Japanese trick takers. So like a kid in a candy store, Ryan, I'm sure you can relate to this. You sort of, you look around, you see this new, you know, this new enchanted world, and you realize actually, you know, you've got a gaping hole in your board game collection. And trick taking Japanese style convert.
Yeah, I think the idea too with, within the past 2 years specifically, there's been so many good games coming out of Japan, these trick-taking games. And there's a lot of new, you know, there's always the cult of the new and always wanting to acquire the new stuff, people talking about the hotness. And it's always hard to avoid it when you see these really cool, innovative designs that are sort of constantly breaking the mold of, you know, what a normal trick-taker would look like. And you see things like Tri-T Area, and it's that looks so neat. I gotta have it.
You gotta have it.
You know, there's many
constructive. That's it, because it's, you know, we're feeding into it, but it's isn't it amazing how much can be done with the trick-taking system and the climbing system? Just when you think you've seen it all, somebody says, you know, all in this one, you can eat the cards. No, not really, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it goes somewhere like that next. It's just, it's constantly amazing, isn't it? The evolution.
Certainly. And just in board gaming in general, I know we're, you know, as the Trick Talkers podcast that we are, we focus a lot on these Japanese trick-taking games or anywhere in the world. I know we heavily focus on Japanese because that's where a lot of these good ones come from. But Germany, Korea, the US, France, like there's a lot of other countries that also have a lot of good games. But like I was just saying, in board gaming in general, there's just always so many good games coming out, always ready for another convention season. You know, you got Essen, you've got Gen Con, all these things where you're seeing so many games that just get hyped up. Like I know personally, a non-trick-taking game is Heat. I really, really, really am excited to try that game. I personally don't own it. I have two friends that do. That's why I've been trying not to buy it. But I know as soon as I play it, I'm probably going to end up getting a copy. I love Flamme Rouge. I love that style of play.
Right. You can't wait to put your foot on the gas. Yeah, I can relate. I thought I won't go for Heat because it's the new thing. I thought I'll leave it a little bit, see how, you know, what comes out. But I still bought a couple of other different racing games and ended up with, you know, giant playmats for them before I'd even broken into my first game to understand how it worked. And I remember you saying to me, Ryan, it looked like one of those kids' mats you had in the 90s where you put little toy cars on them and push them along. So that's how deep you can fall down, you know, rabbit holes. So where does it stop? Well, for me, realizing my fail challenge for last year, and it took somebody to actually write me a Board Game Geek message back to say, Patrick, you've put on your profile this and that. Are you sure you want a copy of El Grande? And I turned around and said, actually, you know, you're right. You've got a point. Maybe I won't on this occasion. I think that was my only victory last year. This year, my challenge is 12 games, 12 months. Now, doesn't necessarily mean I need to get, you know, a game a month or all games in 1 month or whatever. But I've set myself a limit of 12 games. And that also includes trades. So with such a stringent limit, I know you've got loads of confidence in me, by the way, Ryan, to do this, haven't you?
I am already betting that you're going to fail within the first month.
Yeah.
You're going to find someone on BGG selling like half their collection and you're going to find 20 games in there that you're going
to
want.
This is the problem. I mean, it was last year, Johnny basically said to me, Patrick, you know, you've got Trick Takers. You've got Trick Takers, the expansion. Surely you're going to end up with a copy of Little Trick Takers. And of course, the next day I was on there ordering it. So that's how impulsive I really can be. But to make a point to the listeners, I'm declaring it now. 12 games, 12 months. My Board Game Geek name is WKD Shogun. So feel free to send me a horrible geek mail or congratulations if you see my list sort of remain quite static.
And in all seriousness, you know, good luck. I do hope you can manage to do that. I know, like I said, we've been saying here every year, there's always going to be a lot of games out, so I'm sure it'll be difficult. And of course, to the listeners as well, you know, challenge yourself. If you think you were acquiring too many games last year as well, then maybe you follow along with Patrick. Maybe it's not 12 games. Maybe that might be a little too limiting for you. Come up with an appropriate number and you know, make yourself set to that. Whether it's tell a friend or tell your gaming group, whoever it might be, okay, make sure that I don't get more than this and see how it goes.
Yeah, don't do what I do and update your BGG profile with a new month every month, because it probably won't work out for you that way. But, you know, sometimes it's good to have a think about certain games, wish list them, see what other people think, because, you know, I've got a lot of these games at home, and people have said, well, have you played Dwas, or have you played, you know, this tacky design? And I say, well, it's on my shelf, but I haven't got to it yet. And it's good sometimes to slow down and, you know, play the games you've got, enjoy them, and then, you know, set yourself up for the next challenge. I would like to play my entire collection if I can. Probably a bit ambitious with the amount of games I imported last year. But it's always good to you know, play what you've got and appreciate it, because there are some really, really great gems out there. And I know a lot of people who've imported.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to sort of add to that is, even if there is a game that you might be seeing that's new, or even if it's not a new 2023 release, maybe it's one from a couple of years ago that you see, especially in the trick-taking world, there's probably a good chance you have a way to proxy it with an existing game you already have, or try it online, whether that's using playingcards.io or Game Arena, Tabletop Simulator, whatever it might be. So there are a lot of alternatives to it, which, it's always a double-edged sword. It's really hard, especially, you know, being on a podcast here and telling people, hey, go try and buy this game. It's like, we always want to make sure that if it's a game you're interested in, to try and find the way to purchase it and be able to play it, because it's helping support the publisher. It's helping support the designer. Most importantly, it's helping support the artist, the people that are coming up with these amazing ideas and creating them and actually putting them in the world for you to play. You want to be able to show your support for them. But when there's 300, 400, 500, you know, that are coming out every couple months, it's really hard to narrow down which ones do you pick, which ones can you support, because you don't want to break your bank trying to do that. You know, you want to see that designer make more games, and you do that by supporting them. But sometimes getting a proxy, taking pictures, sharing it with people, sharing with friends, telling them about it, letting them know how awesome the game is can be support enough until you can find the right time to purchase that game, as long as it, of course, is still available.
Yeah, and just feeding into that, that's the thing, isn't it? And especially in this hobby and this area of the hobby that we're in specifically, it's the constant worry. And we use Heat as an example. I'm pretty sure that's going to have a fair few different printings based on the reception it's got. But, you know, when you talk about our end of the hobby and the Japanese, Asian games, if you like, not only are they potentially quite difficult to buy and buy at the right time, but it's also the fear factor, isn't it? And I think that feeds into a lot of these purchases is this, you know, is this game is going to be the only time that I can acquire it? Or is this game going to get other releases in the future? And I'm sure you yourself, Ryan, you've probably had some of those moments, and that's probably driven your purchasing decision historically.
Yeah, absolutely. I would want to, I think a perfect example of that is actually Cauldron 15. When this game first came out, there was probably 2 to 3 months. It was widely available on very common Japanese purchasing sites, mainly the one Bodoge. Easily could purchase it, no problem. Wasn't a lot of buzz around it. Like, sure, it was doing okay. You heard a few people say it's pretty good. But then maybe like a month after it went out of stock, I don't know if it's just, again, it's the weird timing of everybody and the fact that that's supply and demand.
That's witches for you. They just disappear. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's like the hype for that game went up like crazy. And a lot of people were talking about it, and this game is really good. It's slightly different than American Bookshop. And there was that constant comparison of which one's better. And then there was lots of people looking for it and asking, where can I get it? And it's just, you can't get it anymore. And people have asked the designer. I know they've made plans now to reprint it, which is great. So there should be availability in the next year. Well, 2023 is the next year now. But what I'm getting at is that there was that time where I could have purchased it. But I was like, no, I don't really need to. It's fine. I have another game that can already proxy it. I haven't tried it yet. I want to see how it plays first. I want to hear from more people. And then once more people started to play and we actually heard reviews, it was nowhere to be found. And a lot of games in this specific part of the hobby, as you were saying, Patrick, have that process with them.
Yeah.
It's almost, you have to buy the game the second it's there, because you never know. This might be that game that never gets printed ever again.
This might be the last one.
Exactly. This might get a one and done printing and there's only 500 copies, never to be seen again. Or it might be one that gets 6 printings and gets picked up by different publishers, and you know it's easily accessible, but you bought it on day one, and you know what? Actually, it turns out it wasn't that great.
Yeah. So I mean, in terms of, you know, I kind of, you think, well, what's the publisher? Are they a small Japanese indie? Have they reprinted some of their historical games? It's trying to ask. That's the million-dollar question, really, isn't it? Will this game be successful and go on to have future prints? I mean, we saw the example just to demonstrate the hype for Cauldron 15. You know, there was that guy in the can't think who it was in the Portland Games Discord who bought, ended up with an acrylic block.
Yeah, it was John.
Yeah, John ended up with the acrylic block of a copy of Cauldron 15. Bless him. But that just goes to show that the hype is real. You know, people want these games, and God forbid that, you know, their proxy, we talked about Zen Market, Baiyi, and these different companies, couldn't get to it in time. Somebody snipes it out from under them. Same story, you know, and then they're sitting, waiting and scouring websites for a long period of time, looking for that copy of that game, that the elusive copy of that game, like I did with Catty, as we've talked about historically. So what is the antidote then, Ryan? What do you think is the answer? Is there even an answer to this? There might not be.
That's exactly it. I don't think there is an answer. At least there's not one individual answer, because really that can only be answered to yourself. For me personally, I have tried to remove that FOMO, remove the fear factor. I have made a lot of bigger purchases from these Japan websites in the past year even, where I have plenty enough now that I want to explore more of what I have. And I know this is the same old song and dance. You know, almost all of us as board gamers always say, oh, yeah, we'll just play, you know, the games we've already got before we get anything new.
Until Heat comes out. Yeah.
Of course, exactly. but no, I really think for me, what I'm doing is I'm still allowing myself to get new games. I'm not trying to limit myself. I'm going to be realistic, but I'm not pushing myself into the I must buy it the second it becomes available. I don't mind waiting until there's more information about the game to be able to make a better decision on it. I, like, for example, Scharfschatten is a game that's nearly impossible to find. I hadn't played it for a while. I finally got to play it at Portland, PGC Con last year in Portland. And I like it. I really, really like it. But I am not trying to rush out and find a copy because I know how expensive it is right now because of how hard it's to find. If a copy just shows up at the right time in the right place for the right amount, then sure, I'll do it. But I'm not trying to race other people to get it because I know how much other people might want it. And I know, like, those races to get to the games first is a big deal. And that goes for any other game, though, in general. Like, I know there's a lot of games that, as we said here, might only have one printing. And that's what I'm trying to do. That's ultimately my answer here, is that if it ends up being a game that I know I can't get, that's fine. There's plenty of other games that I can move on and try and find as well.
Right, you're not going to have dreams about the game, right?
Totally, yes, like Caddy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Texas Showdown is another example. We talked about it on the show. I was lucky enough to find a copy way, way back. Great game. Guess what? You know, it's getting a release, Caesar's Strife, and that's coming out again. And some of these games, some of the excellent trick-taking games, tend to find a way of coming back somehow, even if you have to wait a good period of time for it. So at least that's something positive.
I think there's something to be said about that, too, with the boost in all of these American publishers printing these games. There's a bigger eye now on a lot of these overseas games coming to the North America region at a much faster rate than there was 2-3 years ago.
Right.
So when we keep talking about, oh, this might be the only printing of that game, well, it might be the only printing of the original version of the game, but there's probably a pretty good chance that another publisher would pick that game up. They might retheme it, they might give it new art, but the main game mechanics are still the same. Hamlin Cave is another good example. It was announced that Allplay, previously known as Board Game Tables, is going to be releasing a new version of that called Sail. And that is a really good two-player cooperative trick-taking game.
Excellent. It's,
yeah, impossible to find the original version now. Was in print for a decent amount of time, but yeah, now you can't find it. So knowing that a newer version that'll be easier for most of our listeners in the, you know, North American region, I'd assume probably UK is pretty easy for Allplay games because I know they usually do stuff out your way.
Yeah, I think so. At least if it comes to Europe, there's a good chance we can pick it up, hopefully, and not pay too much for that. But that's another story. like you were saying, a lot of these games tend to find a way of coming back eventually, the really good ones. And some people will say, well, you know, the art isn't as good this time round, or maybe it's better the second or third time round. But at least, you know what, at least you can play the game. And that's the main thing, isn't it?
100%.
And so much good stuff coming out of Japan now that even if you miss a game, is it the end of the world? Because, you know what, 2024, 25, etc., there's always going to be a game that stokes the fire, the inner buyer within you that makes you want it, right? So that's another positive thing.
Yeah. Now, so we've been talking about here some hype for games, how to control it, the fact that, Patrick, you're only going to be getting 12 games in the year of 2023. So my question here actually for you is, are you limiting that to trick takers specifically or all board games in general?
All board games in general, including trick takers, which makes it very, very difficult to me, and that means that my purchasing decisions are going to have to be really, really thought out and really, really refined compared to the 138 games I picked up last year.
I can only imagine that's a fraction of the total number. Yeah. So then I guess to not hype up things too much here, but to have some discussion about what games are coming out in 2023 for the people who, you know, do have their wallets ready. Maybe they saved up last year, didn't get anything. What are some 2023 trick takers that you're looking for?
Yeah, so it's finding the really excellent ones, isn't it? And I think one of the ones I'm really quite looking forward to is Zip Zap Zop by Taylor Rayner. Hopefully that will get a release later this year. Not 100% sure, but fingers crossed. And that is sort of a deck building slash trick-taking game with an improv stand-up comedy theme. And that struck me as really, really unique. But also, I love the idea of the theme. You know what I'm like with my improv puns and jokes on the show. So I thought, well, I can relate to that at least.
That's true. That game's probably great for you.
Would be great for me, yeah. So that's one I've got my eye on. A couple of games I've picked up already, but I picked up the non-English versions, are Prophecy, which is great little take on twist on 99, the original version, if you like, or a version that certainly inspired the game. And also Inside Job, and I know we've talked about that before, Ryan. The German version, I've got a copy of that and stuck a load of stickers over it. But for the listeners' sake, these games are actually getting English releases in 2023. So I think that's quite exciting.
Now, are you going to allow yourself to buy the English versions of Prophecy and Inside Job? Because that's two of your 12 games for games you technically already have. Though they're in different languages, you've done the paste up, so...
I won't buy them, but what I will do is endorse them because they are great games. So I kind of, you know, for example, the deck of cards that comes with Inside Job is language independent, but the main playing card deck, but there's a lot of cards that have got German text on them that do require paste ups, but don't worry, like I said, you know, the English version's coming. One you mentioned to me earlier, Ryan, actually intrigued me quite a lot, was Jekyll and Hyde versus Scotland Yard. Now, you brought this to my attention. I think I saw a picture somewhere. I've got Jekyll and Hyde. So I guess from the listener's perspective, what are your thoughts on this new one?
This is going to be an instant buy for me. And that's an aggressive amount of hype it. But the reasoning for that is the game is designed by the people who did the original Jekyll versus Hyde. I believe it's Gio Neal and Gatan Bujanon. I am sure I pronounced that horribly.
Perfect language skills. Yeah.
I'm sure. But the art is by the artist, Vincent Dutrait, who did original Jekyll versus Hyde. And the publisher is the same publisher as well.
Mandu Games. Sorry, I'm just going to say the name of the publisher. Yeah.
Yeah. So Jekyll versus Hyde, the two-player only trick-taking game, is one of my favorite two-player trick-taking games. I have played that a whole lot on Board Game Arena and in person. The production of the physical version is amazing.
Oh, it's
the
phenomenal.
The metal standee, the little tokens that show your hierarchy of the trump. So this one is one I'm really looking forward to because it is a two-player only again, but this time it's cooperative. There's not a lot of information about gameplay that's been released. So I guess I could say maybe once more information does come out, I might change my mind. But reading on it, on BGG, the mechanisms it does list as a scenario mission campaign game style. So that has me intrigued as well.
Yeah, me too. And from experience, I think Jekyll and Hyde, your Jekyll versus Hyde, should I say, was quite easy to acquire. And that's worth pointing out, actually, because confusingly, this isn't the only Jekyll and Hyde game, is it? There's another trick-taking game with, is it Jekyll and Hyde? It's just called Jekyll and Hyde, isn't it? Or am I?
It's called Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Right.
Which that was also re-implemented as Tatsu in 2022.
So yeah, don't confuse it with the other game. This is Jekyll and Hyde versus Scotland Yard. So looks really interesting. I mean, you can't always guarantee it. Sometimes we import a game, don't we, and we get our fingers burnt because the game wasn't quite as good as we thought. But I suppose the more games you play, and having played the original, you get a better sense. You get a better sense for it. I'm not saying you've got psychic powers here, Ryan, by the way. But do you find yourself, you take a bit more time and spend a bit more time researching about some of these games that are coming out now than perhaps you used to?
I mean, to a certain extent, because unfortunately, a lot of the Japanese ones, there's such limited information on a lot of them. Sometimes you get two sentences at most, and that's it. But sometimes it's not a big enough game. It doesn't have any reviews, even if they're in Japanese, that you can, you know, auto-translate. So some games you really do just have to take that random plunge if you don't know anybody else who has it. But something like Jekyll and Hyde versus Scotland Yard, being published by Mandu Games and as big as Jekyll versus Hyde, the reach that it had and the availability and how easy it was to get that, I'm sure you'll find lots of videos and other podcasts, whether it's ours or somebody else's. I know Board Game Barrage has actually been doing a lot of coverage on trick-taking games recently. So, you know, this game might hit them. So I think this game in particular will have a lot more information that you can listen to and read to actually get an idea if it'd be something for you.
Yeah, and without dwelling on this particular one too long, but it's worth noting that this one won't replace it because this one appears to be a co-op trick-taking game rather than Jekyll versus Hyde, which was a 1v1. Trick-taking game.
Yeah, so just moving on here, there's one game that I actually knew nothing about until right before we recorded this episode, but I was just looking at the list of 2023 trick-taking games, and there's one called Fibonacci's, and the cover art of the game looks like a bag of Doritos.
Interesting.
Nacho cheese specifically, for those who have an important flavor that they care about.
Essential. But I don't recommend it while you're playing with trick-taking card games unless you've sleeved them, right? Because you're going to end up with cheesy cards.
Yes. but that right there has already got my interest piqued. There's very little information about the game except for the game itself is based upon the Fibonacci sequence and that there's a unique trump style and scoring system. So from that alone, I'm listening. But again, that's one where I'm going to have to get some more information to see before I just immediately back it, as much as I really, really want it just for the box art alone. That is amazing. And it's going to be published by Geeks and Orcs, which did the newer version of Potato Man. The art style on that was great. It doesn't list the artist for Fibonacci, so I'm not sure if it's going to be the same person as the Potato Man. But it's designed by Jordi Adan, which was the designer for Cartographers, the Roll and Write.
Yeah, it's a great person behind it.
Yeah, so all of that information right there so far leads me to this probably could be a good design. So definitely on my list to keep an eye out on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to sell Ryan a game, come up with a flavor of crisps and stick a chip on the front, right?
Well, this might be that one game where I allow myself. So every year, I allow myself one game, no matter what it is, good or bad. If it is a hilarious theme, hilarious art, whatever it might be. 2022 was muscle taking.
And how's that working out for you? Are you still preparing to pump those muscles or have you got into it yet?
I still am preparing to pump those muscles. The rules haven't been officially translated. Corey sort of gave the run through in the Portland Game Collective Discord on how it worked, but I want to get like the full translation before it's played. But just from the little mini bit he gave, it looked interesting. But then my year before that was the Life Talking in the Anus game.
And how did that work out?
That game is not great.
Right.
It's fine. It's okay. I still own it because it does have its place. It's almost like QE in a, it's a trick-taking QE, playing two cards every trick. You add up the numbers that you played. Whoever ends up playing the most overall numbers, you add up all your numbers. Whoever spends or plays the most busts at the end and they lose. You're trying to like collect these certain cards that are worth the amount of points. It's kind of interesting, but yeah, I mean, there's so many other games that have been in it. But again, I allowed myself to get it no matter what, regardless of any information about it, just solely based on the silly theme alone. And I think Fibonacci's will be that.
Sorry, what was the name of the anus game, did you say?
Life talking in the anus.
Right.
It's supposed to be, it's like talking out your ass based on like, I've had this experience in my life. I've done this. I've done that.
Right.
Talking yourself up, or you're talking out of your ass. You're making it all up because you've talked too much about it.
Of course.
And
yeah.
That's the person who busts.
Kind of. I've heard that game was the butt of the jokes on Board Game Geek.
Who's to say?
That was it. Yeah. We'll move on that. I've heard it all now, Ryan.
So can I, hold on. Okay, if you're limiting yourself to 12 yeah. board games, can I limit you to 12 bad jokes in a year?
You could try. I mean, I'll probably get about 12.
My challenge?
I get 12 in an episode, I think, don't I? It's a stretch.
I think so.
But, you know, Fibonacci's, that will be one to watch. It's, that's, I like the theme. And funny enough, actually, we talked about Potato Man. It's going with a potato theme, even though, you know, that's kind of a little tedious link between the two.
Yeah, true. Potato chip,
potato game.
It works. I see it.
Yeah.
It comes part of a trilogy of some kind, whatever the third potato.
Trilogy of potatoes.
Yeah.
are there any other games on the list that pique your interest, or is that your hot list for now?
I mean, I'd say one more here just want to touch on real quick. I have a feeling it's going to be kind of subpar.
Okay.
Chaos and Gotham City.
Okay. So we've got Batman theme. Yeah.
We do, yes. And from the little bit of information that's come out about it, there's this really big board that you put in the middle that has like different locations. And from, I think somebody asked in the BGG forums, or I read somewhere on the Discord or Reddit, that it's actually just an unnecessary board. You just use it for like during trick play, you can feel thematic about the location you're fighting for. But as far as actual gameplay, it's unnecessary. But I'm really worried this box is going to be unnecessarily large because they're going to fit that board in there, which looks like it's probably a twofold board, but still, if it's anything like American Psycho, where it had that massive box for a little tiny cardboard mat and playing cards, like I just have a feeling this is going to be the same way. So the trick play seems interesting enough that it'll have me wanting to look at it more, but I'm just afraid that it's going to be way too big of a box. And again, you know, when you're trying to limit your box, or you're trying to limit your shelf space, buying boxes like that, I always hate.
Yeah, I'm with you. I prefer a smaller box that just fits what you need to go inside the box. Obviously allowing room for the sleeves, Ryan, because that's kind of essential, yeah?
Oh, yeah. There's always a hard, fine line to walk, but there is certainly a too big. There is a point where it just becomes unnecessary.
Yeah, and there was that other game that we were trying to figure out how to pronounce it before the episode, weren't we? Dwack in Danger, Duick in Danger. Which one is it?
Duck in Danger,
yeah.
Yeah, I think the pronunciation that I looked up to watch the video for, I think said duck, but D-O-U-C, it's the monkey.
Right, and it's made me laugh, actually, because I've just gone on the BGG page, and it says re-implemented by Duwak Kids. So they're making progress. It's for context, it is a unusual trick-taking game, it says, and it's about, you know, there's monkeys and there are poachers and the rangers and things like that. It did pique my interest when I looked at it originally and I heard some press about it and there were some, you know, good reviews on BGG. However, I read somewhere there was a simultaneous trick play. Haven't played the game, just want to caveat. It might be a gem that's yet to be discovered. But that kind of put me off a little bit. It'd be interesting to give a bit of time and see, you know, what people say about Dwack. We're totally butchering the name, but it's funny. It's fine. We'll see how it works out in future. I'm not as excited about it as your potato chip game.
Yeah, I think that's why I don't have to worry too much longer about how to pronounce, because I don't know if I'll be talking about it more in the future. Right. But hey, I mean, you never know. But like, there's enough information, I think, on the Kickstarter and other videos that I just saw it's probably not going to be the game for me, unfortunately.
No, that's totally fair.
Yeah, but I think with the full year of 2023 ahead of us, there's plenty of options and games that we're looking forward to. And obviously, there's going to be more games that show up as the months come. These are just the ones that have been announced now. So some food for thought here.
Food for thought.
Yeah, a little Fibonacci's for thought. but certainly lots for Patrick to think about, too, about which games he's going to get. Because if you buy too many now, early on, and you get excited, there might be one you see later. But
yeah, then Santa Claus won't bring me anything for Christmas. So there we go. I feel strange talking about that in January, doesn't it? But there we go.
Prepare yourself. You have plenty of time for it.
Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for listening to today's episode. Hopefully it's given you some, as Ryan was saying, some ideas, you know, for based on what's coming out. We've got a full year ahead of us. I know we're both very excited to come out and see what comes out in Tokyo Games Market this year and of those some of those designs that we've just been talking about. So thank you for listening. You've been listening to another episode of Trick Talkers Tea Time. If you'd like to financially support us, then we really do appreciate it. Of course, if you'd rather not and you'd rather just listen, that's cool too. We also appreciate that very much. Just to point out, our Patreon page link will be in the show notes if you wanted to follow up on that. Of course, if you've got questions, comments, recommendations, etc., etc., we can be reached on Twitter at Trick Talkers or via email at tricktalkers@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll both see you again soon.